Welcome to Spark Stories, where entrepreneurs and experts share their brand story and how they found their spark, the spark that started it all.
Welcome to Spark Stories, live business radio, brought to you by the Atlanta Business Radio X Network. Every week, entrepreneurs and experts share the stories behind the brand, who they are, what they do, and why their brands matter. I'm your host, Clarissa J. Sparks. In our Own It series, we dive into the everyday operations of inspiring business owners in our community. You can listen live on Saturdays at 10 a.m. or the rebroadcast at www.businessradiox.com. Today, we're going to talk about women entrepreneurs overcoming biases as a leader. Please allow me to introduce you to one of our amazing community leaders, Darlene Drew. She is a public servant. She's a leadership trainer and the CEO, owner of Leadership Conditioning, Personal and Professional Development. She's a certified leadership trainer, speaker, and executive coach with the John Maxwell team. Darlene helps businesses, companies, and organizations by developing leaders. Her passion is building up people through teaching, training, and speaking. Her guiding life and leadership principle is don't teach what you don't know, don't lead where you won't go, and don't ask for what you won't give. Lead well. Darlene has been a public servant throughout employment in the law enforcement, which began as a correctional officer, where she was initially told, you'll never make it, have decided to make it. She continued this her career path with a focus on making the field better for her staff and inmates. Throughout it, she was asked interesting questions, some of which were, are you here? Why are you here? What should we call you? Why do you do it? These were learning and teachable moments from Darlene's perspective. Darlene, you've taken the steps to launch your company and brave in the world through entrepreneurship and as a leader. I have three questions for you today. Please tell our listeners who you are, what you do, and why your brand matters. Welcome, Darlene.
Thank you, Clarissa. I am excited to be here with you today and to be a participant in what you do, one of the things, the many things that you do in your service to the community. So to answer your first question, who I am, and I appreciate the introduction. My name is Darlene, as you shared, and I, when I introduce myself, I go back to my early beginnings. There would be no me if it were not for my parents. So I am the product of a large family. It is 11 of us. I'm the youngest of 11 children, and I grew up on the south side of Chicago. My parents were my first examples of all things good, quite frankly. My dad worked two jobs most of his life. And that's what I saw. That was my example of two things, one leadership and the other hard work, that anything that you want to have, you've got to be willing to work for it. And both my parents did that. My mom was a stay-at-home mother and she was the boss of our house.
I mean, most are, right?
She was absolutely the boss. You know, we're all familiar with the acronym CEO. As I grew up and learned about leadership, I said, my mom was the COE. And that means she was chief of everything else in our house. She pretty much called the shots. And so those are my early beginnings. And throughout life, you know, I lived, I moved around, I went to college, and I met my husband. We've been married now 16 years, met him at a conference. And I knew that day, and I'll say this because I am not a romantic. I'm not a person. I'm not saying that love at first sight doesn't happen. But when I met my husband, not in that moment, but that night, because I journal, I wrote in my journal, wow, God, you've introduced me to my husband. Wow. And that's who I am. I've worked in the federal government, as you said, for 32 and a half years. Met him at a conference that was held by that organization. And I believe that I have done exactly what I'm supposed to do from a spiritual perspective, that I've been in the right place at the right time. It hasn't necessarily been an easy road, but that's who I am. Oscar Jr.'s baby girl, the wife of Daryl Drew and a humble servant that is committed to serving my community. And I believe that that's the way that we can all make the most difference in the world.
Well, thank you for making a difference. And then you give us some who are still single and unmarried a little hope that if we're in the right place at the right time, we may bump into who's supposed to be on the journey with us.
Absolutely.
So good deal.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about your role in the correction as a correctional officer and your career path.
Okay. Yes, what a path that was and how that happened is a very, very interesting thing because, you know, sometimes in life, particularly when we're young and even as we mature in life, but when I was young, my desire was ultimately to be a lawyer. Now, I've shared with you before that wasn't initially it. You know, I grew up in Chicago. Soul Train was everything. I was that girl, loved to dance. I was going to be a Soul Train dancer. Didn't have the skill enough to make a living out of it. Wanted to be a teacher. Most of us are highly impacted by good teachers when we have good teachers. And so I had a series of good teachers who I admired. And one in particular, have to give out to a shout out to Mrs. Little, who's long gone. But she was my first example of the possibilities for us kids, that there were so many things that we could do. So moving forward, I ultimately realized what I really wanted to do was to be a lawyer. And a lot of that had to do with my community. I saw a lot of people who looked like my brothers. There were oftentimes with cuffs on them. And I had a curiosity and a yearning for the political system and the criminal justice system. And I decided, you know, the criminal justice system would be where I would really want to put my focus. I started out in college majoring in poli-sci, and then I changed it to criminal justice, still with the intent on being a lawyer. The shorter part of that is none of my siblings had gone to college. And none of them really thought that that was a possibility. Whereas, you know, when you're younger, you just kind of believe, well, maybe I can do that and I can do that. So I really didn't let the financial tight situation that we grew up in keep me from dreaming that I would go to college. And so I did and graduated with plans on being a lawyer. You know, I'm going to change the community. I'm going to help people who are underrepresented in the community and afford them the opportunity to excellent counsel. So after I graduated from college, you know, guess what? Another reality set in, and it was money. And
money.
You know, and I just didn't want my parents, you know, when you have just great parents who will do just about anything for you, I didn't want my parents to go through the financial strain of putting me through law school, even though they were ready to do it. My siblings were ready to throw in their nickels and pennies, whatever it took. I just didn't want to do that. So I decided that I would work for a short time, just a short time. I thought maybe it would be about 6 months. In a prison as a correctional officer. And that's what I did. Now, I can't say that my family was like, yay, we're so happy. They were not. They were absolutely not. Look, they had a whole situation to keep me from working in that prison. So, you know, when your dad calls your grandmother and says that his youngest child, who he thought he really had a handle on, has lost her mind. She wants to work in a prison. And then your grandmother calls you and says none of her grandkids are working in a prison. You know, you got some work to do to get them all on board. So that was what it was like initially. They were not on board with me.
So but how did you navigate through that? Because I think a lot of times as entrepreneurs and as women leaders, we have a support system, but there's still a little apprehension about supporting us in the way that we need support.
Yeah. The way I navigated through it was I was accustomed to partnership and making agreements with my dad. So we had an agreement, and that agreement was, he said, okay, I'll support it and everyone will support it as long as you don't stay, that it's going to be temporary. And I said, it will be. Absolutely. This is going to be for a short term, 6 months, 9 months max. I'm going to save all the money that I make and then we're going to be in a better situation. And he said, okay. That's what we'll do. And so that positioned him and my family, everyone else. Once my dad said yes, everybody else said yes. So that's how I got them on board. That's how I started, went through the interview and eventually got hired. Now, even that wasn't like I thought it would be. It went from no, you're not hired to then being hired after I called them and said, I got my letter that said that I was not hired and it was a mistake.
And it was a mistake. Wow. Yeah. So that has to be a lot to process as well, to, you know, to think that the door was closed and then the door was open. So you kind of walked around in a revolving door.
Yeah.
I think that also happens with most of us. Sometimes if things present themselves as an opportunity, but we have to be resilient. And even when the door looked like it is closing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I wholeheartedly agree with you, because a lot of times, you know, we rightfully are trusting in ourselves, and we certainly, particularly as women, have enough instances where we start doubting and saying, you know, am I good enough? Am I capable? Can I do this? Well, in my younger years, I was like, yes, yes, and yes, I can do all that. Yep, mm-hmm. I'm your girl. That was my 20-something-year-old self thinking. So when I went through the interview at the time, I didn't have any fears about it at all. I didn't have any fears. I mean, the way I describe it is how I felt. I felt like it was a great interview. I felt like I slayed that interview, and they're going to be better when they hire me. So when I got the letter saying that, and I was excited to receive what I anticipated was a congratulatory letter. So I opened it with all the excitement that my determined self would have had within me. And it said, you were not selected. And so I just had to stop for a second and then just read through it, saw the person whose name was on the letter, and I called him. I'll never forget that man. I know his first, last name, all of it. And, and I called him and I told him who I was. And I said, you have mistakenly sent me a letter that said that I was not selected. And I asked him to look at my file again and let me know when I should report for duty. Now, when I look back on that, I'm like, wow, that young girl was something else.
Because I hear confidence all through your story. I'm like, wow, that was very bold and confident.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I was so focused on it. One, I really believed that it was a mistake. I still believe it. That means sometimes HR can make a mistake. I believed it then. I believed it now. But the other important thing that I share with young people and other professionals that, you know, it could be a mistake. You can get something that says no, and it's really a mistake. And sometimes our no just means this isn't the one. It's going to move me closer to my yes. This time I thought they have made a mistake. And so I called them and told them that. And sure enough, a couple of weeks later, I got another letter and it said, congratulations. And that put me on my journey as a correctional officer. And it was a tough journey for a lot of reasons. I didn't look like, you know, there's a stereotype about what you should look like and how you should carry yourself in prison. So my first obstacle once I got hired was I didn't look like people thought I should look. You know, I was told, you know, you're too thin, you're too girly, you know, you're not going to be able to handle a prison environment. You're going to compromise security because inmates are going to be able to talk you into anything. And beside all of that, I still had to get through the requirements to really retain the job. So you're hired, but you're not hired for long if you don't pass academics, if you don't pass self-defense, and if you don't pass firearms.
Oh.
And so I wasn't worried about most of it except firearms.
Firearms.
I was worried about firearms. So I was completely unfamiliar with firearms. And really the only thing that I knew about a weapon was what my brothers told me. So, and this was very real for us growing up on the south side of Chicago. They literally would tell us, me and my sisters, look, you all hear something, hit the floor. That's what I knew. That's what my brothers taught me. And that's what I did. So
that was firearm safety 101.
Yes, exactly. So that wasn't going to work in terms of keeping the job. I had to really learn the fundamentals and how to utilize a weapon. And I didn't do well. You know, I failed throughout the training exercises. So I was so bad that the training instructor actually whispered to his assistant that I would never make it. And so just imagine that as a 20-something year old, you know, you're excited about the opportunity. You got a plan with your dad and your family, and you hear someone. Now, it's one thing when people talk about us and we don't hear it.
Right.
But you hear it. You hear them say, she's never going to make it. And so that did something to my psyche. You know, at first it's kind of like a pain, but then I just switched it around and made it a part of my determination that if you count me out today, you're going to count me out prematurely because I'm going to make it through. Now, granted, I was really bad. I was really bad. So, you know, that's how it started for me, with struggling with the firearms process, the firearms instructor saying that that they were going to send me to the staff training academy, and that he fully expected that I would be sent home, because if you didn't pass all parts of it, then they would give you your plane ticket, put you on a plane, and send you back home. So he said that that was what was going to happen to me. And that's what I left with those words from him, but also a determination within myself saying, I'm going to show them. And so when I went through the academy, guess what? I went through that process again, and I didn't do well. I failed again and again and again. And I had the same encounter with another training instructor. But this one was more upfront about it. He didn't whisper it. He didn't call anyone to the side. He just told me out loud in front of everybody, like a drill sergeant, that, you know, Monday will be my do or die day. And if I didn't pass, they were absolutely going to put me on a plane to go home. The good news is I practiced all that weekend, that Monday. When people thought I wasn't going to make it, including my peers, said, you know, see you later. We know where you're going. I passed, and I passed significantly. And that became the beginning of my career working in law enforcement, specifically corrections. And even with passing and going back to the facility, I still didn't get the, like, you know, you're one of us. It was still like, you're so girly, and we don't think you're going to make it. And it didn't help when I started working as a correctional officer in prisons. Inmates and staff, but particularly inmates, everyone gets a nickname. Everybody gets a nickname, whether we know it or not. So my nickname was Colgate. The inmates began to call me Officer Colgate. I smile
a lot. That's nice. Very fitting. Very fitting.
Yeah. So that was the beginning of it. And I actually, to the nickname part, I was in trouble for that. I was actually relieved of my post. The lieutenants had another officer come to my housing unit and tell me that he was relieving me, that I was relieved of it, and to go see the lieutenant. I went to see the lieutenant, and he said, we can't have officers that smile all the time. You're not going to make it in this career being the officer that smiles. But he miscalculated, because I proceeded to get promoted from correctional officer over that time period to various levels of increased responsibility to ultimately to assume 3 assignments as a warden. So I think it's fair to say that that was a miscalculation.
A miscalculation. I love your confidence. I love your spirit. I love your Colgate smile. And you definitely overcome a lot of biases early on in your career. And I think, like I said, because of your confidence, I think that is a characteristic that a lot of entrepreneurs and leaders should possess in order to continue on the path of success. So again, how do you find that inner confidence when everyone is telling you no, they're counting you out, and they're talking behind your back, and they're talking in front of your face? Again, what's that inner drive?
Yeah, I think the inner drive for me is twofold. One is certainly my faith and my belief. And then the other part is, you know, just always pausing and examining myself. Who am I? Who am I? And I used to do that as a young person. Who am I? I'd say I'm God's child. Who am I? I'm Oscar Jr.'s baby girl. Who am I? I'm going to do better. I'm going to do better, and I'm going to do more than what my family has done. And those 3 things have always been my charge. Those have been the 3 things that when it gets difficult, when people are saying things, and then you start asking yourself, well, is that true? You know, is that true? No, this is what I'm supposed to do. So I've always had my focus on what am I supposed to be in this world doing? What am I supposed to do? No matter what they say, no matter how many people have said, you're not going to make it. I mean, that happened to me throughout my career. When I was promoted to various levels, I was PIO three different times, and people were focused on, she's too young. I heard that all of my career. And I just kind of looked over it and said, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? What am I here for? And that has been the driving point. And I think even sometimes people's biases and their unkindness has also been something that I just turned around and said, okay, I'm going to use that to build up my energy and my determination and my faith to keep doing what I believe is bigger than what all of these people are saying, because I really believed ultimately that I was on track with what I was supposed to be doing. And it wasn't my responsibility to make other people understand what I understood.
Right. So it sounded like you knew your why and you knew who you were. And now what type of impact do you think you had on your coworkers, on the inmates and people that you encounter?
Wow. The impact that I've had, and I'll use the words that others, mentees, proteges have shared with me over the years, including inmates. I have an amazing story about a couple of inmates. But with my proteges and staff that have worked with me, something that people have shared with me often about working with me, one is I've always had an expectation that you got to work. You know, that I use this example of people getting up, getting dressed, driving through traffic. Now, we live in Atlanta, so we know wherever we go, you got to get through traffic. So get up, get dressed, try to get cute, right? Get in your car, drive through traffic, and then come to work and not work. That is illogical to me. I don't understand that. So I've always said to people, when you come to work, be ready to work. If you can't help the team, don't hurt the team. And what I'm going to do is bring out the best in you. I'm not your enemy. I'm your friend that sees myself as somebody who can help you get where you want to go. But you have got to be willing to work. And people who weren't willing to work, from a leadership perspective, I had no problems holding people accountable, you know, and I would say to them that I'm not here to hurt you, but I'm also here not to let you hurt us. And when you're not doing your job, when you're not fulfilling your responsibility, what you signed up for, you're hurting us. And I can't let you do that. And most people understood that. You know, people know when they're not working, they know when they're not contributing. And so so the feedback ultimately has been, you've encouraged me, you've inspired me, you've made me want to be better. And oftentimes doing the very things that sometimes people say, I can't believe she wants me to do this. And then you find yourself doing it because as you mature in life, realizing that, wow, this is really good for me. So that's what I hear a lot from the staff end. From the inmates, one of the most endearing, powerful inmate stories I have came after I retired, right? And I got a message from a person on LinkedIn whom I did not know. Mm-hmm. And he told me that he was writing to say thank you to me. Because his employee that works, an employee that worked for him was his star employee that was just doing great, great, great work. And this person told him, he asked the employee a question, who are some of the people who have made the most strongest impact on you? Who are those people? And so the employee started naming the people, and one of the persons that he named was me. And he said, this warden, I was in a prison where she was the warden. And the things that she would do with the population, something as simple as she would do housing unit inspections and check out our cells. Mm-hmm. And she would go in the cell, we would step out, and she would notice everything. And one of the things she noticed was a word that I would put on the wall. And every day she would challenge me about, what does that word mean? What am I going to do with that word? And the inmates shared that that motivated him to put more words and more words, knowing that I'm going to look at it and I'm going to ask him and we're going to have a conversation about it. Well, that individual is out of prison. Obviously, he worked for this man, was doing a great job working for him, just got his master's degree, has been in a couple of my trainings and put his son in one of my trainings. And now he's working on his doctorate. So, you know, that's just one of those stories that you just, it's just a confirmation of what we're doing when we know that it's what we're supposed to do. And when we know that it's bigger than us.
And that's very important too. Again, it's just all the evolution in the journey and the people along the way. I think a very important part of leadership is impact. And again, bringing who you are into your organization and into the environment. And I think that just, it just propels you to where you're supposed to be. And it's good. So I know, fast forwarding, you've now been in the correctional system as various leadership roles. I think now you're probably at retirement. How did you transition from retirement into the world of entrepreneurship?
Great question. The way I did it, actually, when I was working in corrections, and of course, obviously, your viewers were here that, you know, I thought she was going to go to law school. Well, that changed because I realized that my place was to stay working in the prison setting. And one of the things that's always been a major part of me is growth. Learning. I love learning. And as I would learn, I would teach. From the time I was a little kid, didn't know much. So if I knew my ABCs, I'd try to teach other kids and they would actually listen to me. So with that energy and that passion for growth and learning myself and teaching other people, I was the warden that sometimes staff and inmates would ask me, are you the warden or are you the teacher? Are you the trainer? And I would say, I am both. So I knew that when I completed my career with the federal prison system, that I would be teaching, training people somewhere. That was a given. I knew that I would be doing that because that is what I'm called and purposed to do. That's what I can do best for people in terms of contributing to their growth. What I didn't know was where I would be doing it, whether I would be in an academic environment, because I love school, I love the academic arena, or if I would start my own business. So really, it happened pretty just naturally. I was having a conversation with my husband, who's an old former athlete, right? And I was talking, he was talking about athleticism. I'm talking about personal growth. And I had questions about athletes because I always had a bias in college. I thought they got a pass. Right. And he was explaining to me that they didn't. And he was talking about what it takes to be fit from a physical perspective. And I said, well, that's it. It requires fitness from a leadership perspective. And that's how it all came together, that I would start my own business as an entrepreneur. And I would call it leadership conditioning, based on the belief that you have to be fit in order to effectively lead. And that's where the idea started. And after I retired, I went through the process of, you know, applying for my LLC and getting my business formalized.
I like that story. And I love the analogy, because we do have to be physically fit, mentally fit, and it's a conditioning process. How dealing with that, what is that balance like, taking care of yourself physically and mentally as an entrepreneur?
Yeah. You know, we all know who are in this entrepreneurship lane. It's a lot of work, right?
It's a lot of work.
So the good news is, you know, working where I previously worked, it was a lot of work. It was a lot of work and it felt like a lot of work. There's a little bit difference here in that I'm not worried about whether everybody's secure at night in their cells and all of that kind of stuff, but it's still a lot of work. And so where I get my peace is I'm an early morning riser. I like to get up early when no one else is getting up, although I have a spouse who tries to get, I'm like, no, I need this time. I need this time. And so I've always gone through a process of having that quietness in the morning because I need it. I really need it in order to do everything else. And what I would say to people, what works for me, and I realize we're all different, is whatever it is for you that you know that you need to do everything else. It's just like our cars, right? Our car can't get us anywhere unless we fill it up with gas. I know that I can't offer content to people if I don't get up and get what I need to get me going. And so I have to take care of me going through that process, my prayer, my meditation, my grateful journal, and my regular journal where I write, this is what I learned. This is what I messed up on. This is what I'm going to do better. This is what I want to happen today, or, and that type of thing. It just really keeps me grounded. And then from that, then I go into the other things, you know, the whole putting together content or preparing for a speaking engagement, you know, all of that I put in the middle. And then it's the exercise, the physical exercise. Now, again, I have a spouse who enjoys working out 2 times a day. I'm not that girl. I do it simply because I've had experiences with my large family of people having medical maladies. And so I've always known that we have to be very conscious of what we eat and what we do with our bodies. And that's what I do. That's kind of my sandwich approach to getting through the day and doing all the things that entrepreneurs requires of us, being all of these different positions until as we bring other people in. But we know that it's a lot of work, but the beauty of it, and I'm sure, Clarissa, you know this, is you're doing what you love to do. You're doing what makes you smile. You're doing what you believe can impact people, where you can make a difference, large and small. And when you have that, and you're privileged to do that every day, it's worth getting up. I can smile about it in the midst of the grind because I know it's what I'm supposed to do and that I can help people by doing it, you know. And it's all about leadership, you know, and we've all had experiences with good leaders and bad leaders.
Yeah.
So I believe my mission is to help leaders develop good leaders, because leaders impact people's lives. We know about people at work that they are so adversely affected by bad leadership that they're sick, literally, physically, mentally, emotionally sick. Mm-hmm. Because of bad leadership. So again, going to that fitness part of it, when people aren't fit, we hurt people. Right. My endeavor is to help people by developing leaders.
That's awesome. What advice would you give to someone who are in their early leadership journey?
I love that, because I love, particularly when people are in that early leadership journey, that the advice that I would give to them is first and foremost, recognize what leadership is about. Mm-hmm. Recognize what leadership is about. And it's about people. It's not about our titles. It's not about our ego. It's about people. And ask the question, what can I do to help people? Why am I here to help people? And how am I going to do that? So that's what I always say, first and foremost. And then the other thing is to stay humble. Humble. Mm-hmm. Humble yourself. Don't take yourself too seriously. If you have an ego, and most of us do, get over yourself and build relationships and nurture relationships with people. If you don't have relationships and good relationships with people, I don't care how smart you are, mm-hmm. you're not going to be successful as a leader.
And I think that's so important. And as a leader, what would you think would be your biggest aha, that differentiator as your leadership style?
I would say my aha, the differentiator, is just really being myself with people, you know, because different people, but what I saw particularly when I worked in the prison system, people start seeing you differently because you have the CEO title. You know, they think something magically happened to you and you're no longer normal. Mm-hmm. And what I've always made it a point to do is to share with people, I grew up just like you did. I started here and I worked my way through just like you. And so the aha for me is when I approach people that way in a very real perspective, that I'm not some, you know, person that is beyond anything. I am a human being just like you, and let's deal with each other respectfully. And it's something so basic, but I think that was the aha. I would say that was the aha for me about how people start putting you in a whole different level simply because of the title. And the title is not who I am, is what I've always said and still say. The title is not who I am. That title as a warden is what I did. As an entrepreneur, it's what I do. And it's a privilege to be able to do both now, I am the person who's passionate about training. That's what I do.
Well, like I said, you exude the confidence and definitely have demonstrated your leadership roles. Now, I know earlier in the interview, you mentioned that you are a lifelong learner.
Yes.
What books, podcasts, what fuels you now in your learning journey?
Thank you. Woo, I read so many books, and sometimes, you know, I read them over and over. You know, when a book is so good, right? And it's like, I got to read that again. I got to read that again. So one of the books I'm reading now, it's entitled Spiritual Leadership, and it's by Oswald, and I can't even remember his last name. And it's a great, great book. Another book that I've loved reading is a book, it's called Joy, and it's written by Joy. She's an entrepreneur that grew up in Philadelphia and just went through a series of obstacles, and she was able to get through it. Another book is a John Maxwell book that I love is Intentional Living. And it's all about getting up every day, knowing what your purpose is and fulfilling that purpose. I've started rereading. I said to you, sometimes I reread books that I've read before, but I started rereading an old book on Abraham Lincoln about his principles of leadership. That's another one that I love. And the last one that I'll mention is Go Giver. I love that book because it's all about giving people. You know, as an entrepreneur, our focus often is, you know, how do we make a sale? Da 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 da. And this book talks about adding value to people. Mm-hmm. That the more people that you have the opportunity to add value to, the more of your business you'll ultimately be able to grow. And one of my favorite podcasts is really one of my fellow peers off the Maxwell team, and her name is Nicole Simmons. And her podcast is largely about entrepreneurship, but also with a significant focus on leadership.
Very good. I'm taking notes so that I can go back and pick up those books. And I think the one that stood out, you said Go Givers?
Yes.
Okay.
Go Givers.
Go Givers. Can't wait to pick that up, or at least on Audible and listen to it. Very good. Now here at She Sparks and on Spark Stories, we're all about community. And we want to know, how can we support you as a community?
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. And, you know, supporting me is one, it's very kind of you. And I would say something that I do every year at the end of the year, and I'll send this information to you. And it's a service project where I do virtually. The first time I did it was in person. And I host this, what's called the Undefeated Women's Leadership Circle. I invite speakers in, and it's all about encouraging, enriching, and adding value to the lives of women. So the way that the three words that to remember it is to equip, encourage, and empower women. And we do that bringing women all across the globe. A registration will come out. It starts in November. It's a 4-series session, 2 speakers, 1 hour. It's a start on time and a hard stop. And it's all about building up women. And it's based on equipping women with tools to finish each year strong and what? Undefeated. Doesn't mean that we don't have challenges in our lives, but we get right back up and decree that we're undefeated. And then positioning us to go into the new year ready for all that comes. So that's something that, you know, if you share with your viewers, it's virtual, it's free, and it's going to enrich their lives. All they have to do is show up.
Oh, that's really good. I can't wait to sign up. So please send that information over. Sounds good. So lastly, how can we learn more about you? Are you on Facebook, Instagram? Where do you hang out?
Okay. I hang out largely on LinkedIn and Facebook. I just started my Instagram account, so we won't count that because I haven't done much with it. But the major platforms for me is LinkedIn and Facebook. I regularly post on both of those platforms, on Facebook and in the public page. So you don't even have to be connected to me to access me on Facebook. And then also on LinkedIn. And those are the two easiest ways to see what I'm doing by way of social media. And then any viewers who are interested, if I can share that, is that okay?
Yeah, that's true. Yes.
Any viewers that are interested, they can also reach me at my website, which is www.johnmaxwellgroup.com. and then / remember my name, Darlene Drew. So you can reach me that way. And if they want to send me an email directly, it's leadershipconditioning@leadershipconditioning.com. So the first name and then what I've been talking about, leadership conditioning, they could send me an email directly and I'd be happy to get to know them and see, you know, what's going on with them and if there's a way that I can be of service to them.
Very nice. Thank you. I'll make sure I put all of your contact information in the notes and that way we can support you. Darlene, thank you for sharing who you are, what you do, and why it matters to be a strong leader and the biases and the challenges that you've overcome. Again, here on Spark Stories, we celebrate business owners today and every day. So our listeners, please remember to go out and support her and your local businesses and express support on their social media platforms. Again, thank you and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Spark Stories. If you're looking for more help in gaining focus, come check out our website where you can find episode show notes, browse our archives, and access free resources like worksheets, trainings, events, and more. It's all at www.shesparks.com.